Finally, welcome back to Radio or Not. It's episode number 5, Steely Dan. I'm Nicole Sandler. All right, it's been a while since the last episode, Ray Davies. Not for lack of trying, just kind of busy around here, what with raising a 6-year-old by myself and trying to run a business and put out this podcast on the side. All right, so I figure I will sponsor this by myself and direct you to legacyvideo.tv. Transforming your memories into the gift of a lifetime. If you've got those old photos and home movies gathering dust, we can help you with that. So check out legacyvideo.tv. Now on to Steely Dan. All right, we're going to take a little detour away from the KSCA Music Hall. I know I said this about Ray Davies, that was one of my favorite interviews, and it was. I guess I'm going through a lot of my favorite interviews at the beginning. I had the opportunity to spend about an hour with Steely Dan. Walter Becker and Donald Fagen, the nucleus of Steely Dan, got back together after, a 20-year break in recording to do a new album. It was February 8th, 2000, and the album Two Against Nature, their first studio release in 20 years, was going to come out at the end of the month. And, I was a Los Angeles radio personality, and I was lucky enough to be chosen as the person to interview them for the world premiere broadcast of Two Against Nature. So this interview was edited and cut up into segments and used in a syndicated radio show to launch the album. What I have for you today is the actual full unedited interview. All right, and I'll share that with you along with the music we played during the broadcast. It's a long one, so I'm going to split it in half and give you part one today, and we'll upload part two in the next week or so. All right? So here we go. Not only the parts that were recorded for broadcast, but the chatter in between and a lot of the stuff that didn't make it onto the final show. Here we go. Steely Dan, radio or not.
Hello, testing, one. Yo, my man, Phil. Yo. Everything, we're go for a take. We're rolling.
You want me to move this so you can see?
Phil? No, we don't want to see in there. God, we know what's in there by now.
You've seen them already.
Here comes Phil.
No. We're good.
Phil's there. Who was that? Okay, so.
We're good.
All quiet on the set, please.
So we're going to do segments and lead into songs,
okay,
and we'll talk a little bit about everything.
We'll just go with the flow of that sort of.
It's also going to air the week before the album comes out, so the 24th around.
Oh, yeah, so this is actually around February 23rd, 24th.
Okay.
And your album's coming out in a few days.
Okay.
To being
like
early
a couple of weeks away. End of February.
That's what they think.
As opposed to being the end of February.
It's the end of February as opposed to being early.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
You know.
All right, so we'll try and put ourselves in a...
Yes.
In a frame of mind where we've sort of rolled past a few more holidays. Valentine's Day is gone, President's Day, that kind of thing.
Decoration Day.
When is Decoration Day?
I don't really know.
I don't know if there is a Decoration
Day. I don't either.
Day.
Okay. Are we ready? Are we rolling?
Yeah.
All right. I'm Nicole Sandler. Welcome to the world premiere of Steely Dan's Two Against Nature. We're at Riversound Studios in Manhattan, where much of the album was recorded, and I'm thrilled to be sitting across from Donald Fagen and Walter Becker.
Well, thank you. Welcome to Riversound.
The thrill is all ours.
So is this home away from home right now?
It's our actual home.
This is home, yeah.
Really.
Okay.
Just about. We live a few blocks away from here.
Uh-huh.
This couch folds out.
I see. And it's big enough for both of you?
Well, we take turns, you know.
Okay. One is mixing while the other one sleeps?
That's it.
Okay. I have an odd question to start out with, but in looking at the timeline of Steely Dan and the way you've done things over the years, I'm wondering if it's coincidence, okay? It was about 20 years between tours. Like, you stopped touring in 73, and then you toured again in 93, and now it's about 20 years between albums. And if you take it a little further... I know, Walter, your mm-hmm. birthday was just on February 20th.
Mm-hmm.
I want to guess that you guys met around the age of 20 at Bard College. Is there something there?
Were you born in Los Angeles?
No, I was born in New York.
Because I'm wondering, you know, usually we don't get this kind of Nostradamus-like symmetry questions, but you may have a point, you know, because we don't know, you know, what happens on these other levels, you know, of interaction, you know.
That's right. If you were fishing about for some sort of occult explanation, we wouldn't have it. You know, maybe we're just like, you know, baldness or something. We like to skip a generation every once in a while.
Ah, okay.
Something like that.
Well, that makes sense. Why a new Steely Dan record now?
You know, you're right.
In fact, we should just recall them immediately, because I can't think of
thing.
A good reason.
Yeah, really, you know, the more times I've asked that question, the less certain I am that there's any decent answer for it. But
we were touring in the 90s, 93, 94, and 96, and some other years, and we were getting a little tired of playing the old tunes, although they hadn't been played, most of them, in the 70s, since we didn't tour for most of the 70s. We still felt we need some new songs to juice up the band and you know, make it more fun for us. And since we're going out this year, this summer, we'll finally have some new songs to play. And in this way, hopefully some people will be familiar with them as well. So that, because you can't really do that much new material that you're springing from, you know, on an audience without them being familiar with mm-hmm. with it, you know.
So we'll talk about the touring plans in a little while. So you started this process on this new album a couple of years ago. Did you know then that it would take 2 years to record?
Well, not exactly. We actually started writing before we went out on tour in 1996 and wrote for a couple of months, then picked up when we came back in the winter of 97 and started about a year later. And so, yeah, it did take almost 2 years to do the album. And, you know, we hadn't, on the one hand, we hadn't planned that it would take that long. On the other hand, it had occurred to us that, you know, sometimes things take a little longer than you might hope, and so we weren't all that surprised when the time frame got a little stretched out there.
I think I've sort of figured out everything takes at least six times longer than you think it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that?
Well, that's like the 20-year thing, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, it's going back to that strange symmetry, you know?
Some mm-hmm. weird law of nature. Who's
the fearful symmetry.
That's right.
What is your writing process? The two of you write together? Do you sit in a room? Like mm-hmm. I have visions of like the old Brill Building thing. That
sit in a room. We tend to be more sort of like the you know, the prototypical songwriting teams of yore. With the exception that in most of those teams, one guy was the lyricist and one guy wrote the music, and we both do both of those things. But, you know, we sit there, we pace around, we have computers and dictionaries and thesauruses and, you know, various rental movies, you know, we take long walks, you know, go get coffee.
Just like Newley and Bracusse.
Okay. So do you... Do you write lyrics first, music first? Is there any set?
Well, usually we have a piece of music or a fragment of lyrics or sometimes a title, and sometimes they sort of both come together. And obviously these ideas, some of them are developed individually, you know, on our own, and then some, just when we're sitting and talking, you know, we'll just start looking at a fragment of music or deciding what would be a good idea for a song. And then usually at that point, we write usually most of the music and then fill in the rest of the lyrics afterwards.
Now, your music is quite intricate. There are a lot of parts. Do you, for instance, with the horns, do you write all that, or do you wait till the players come in the studio and give them some leeway, or is that all from the brains of...
Well, that's written, you know, and Donald actually did most of the charts and did all the charts on this album with an occasional assist oh. from me or from somebody else. But, you know, that's one of the things you sort of need to be prepared with if you're doing music of any sort of complexity and you want the guys to play anything but, you know, unison cliches, I suppose. You'd have that prepared in advance. There are other sorts of things. If you're having someone coming in to overdub a guitar part or something like that, usually you just sort of have a vague notion of what might work, or, you know, or not even that. You know, you're just sort of depending on someone's stylistic input and, you know, their impression of the thing to help you come up with a part.
Generally speaking, though, we compose written music, which then can be amended in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
really.
All right, well, we're here for the world premiere of Two Against Nature. The first song that most of the people listening have heard is the first single called Cousin Dupree. And when I first heard it, I thought, at least lyrically, this is quintessential Steely Dan. It's it's kind of your basic incest song, though. Who came up with that concept?
Well, I don't know if incest is basic Steely Dan, but certainly the fact that it's a dirty song.
I don't know that you've touched on incest before, but...
You mean in our work or personally?
Work-wise. I don't know about your personal
life. Here's what happened. A few years ago, we were toying with the idea of doing, for reasons too perverse to describe now, we were toying with the idea of doing an all-country album.
Really?
And which, you know, we may yet do.
And there would be incest in
and that. And we were sort of thinking of what, you know, takeoffs on prototypical country song themes, you know, or you know, folklore of rural America, you know.
Taking the typical themes and then maybe exaggerating
rural legends, you know. And that was one of the things we tried to do. And this
so
was,
cousins come into...
Yeah, well, as you know, this is sort of a running gag for the last 150 years or so in America, you know, that in certain small towns everybody is related and so on. Mm-hmm. And so that we were just sort of riffing on that.
So you weren't basing this on any particular sleazeball in one of your families?
No.
Okay. Well, Cousin
although
Dupree,
we certainly could have.
You know, I'm sure if I think hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a Cousin Dupree in every
sure.
town.
Well, a cousin or an uncle or a great aunt or
absolutely.
Something.
Well, why don't we listen to it? It's from Steely Dan's brand new Two Against Nature, Cousin Dupree.
Into a living hell. But what is it exactly turns you off? Oh, honey, how you grown like a rose? Well, we used to play when we were three. How about a kiss for your cousin Dupree? How about a kiss for your cousin Dupree? How about a kiss for your cousin Dupree? How about a kiss for your cousin Dupree?
Which is in stores on Tuesday, February 29th. Now, that's leap day.
Barring extraordinary hazard, as like, we always like to say. Well, in case, you know, for some reason the leap year is suspended this year or something like that.
Now, did you, when you knew that the timing was about right, did you decide, hey, leap day, let's put out our album on leap day?
No, somebody at Warner's did that.
Oh.
We believe.
Another case of, you know, unexplained perversity.
There you go. There's a lot of it happening. Well, speaking about perversity, so far the early reviews are very good.
Mm-hmm.
The critics are liking it. Steely Dan is back.
The tide may yet turn, of course.
Yeah, because, you know, there's always a backlash.
That's true, mm-hmm. And it is still early.
We tend to always do well with early adopters, and it's, you know, the more the sort of stick-in-the-mud kind of guy, you know, that has trouble with what we're working on.
Do you pay much attention to that? Do you care?
No, not too much, but we
sometimes have a laugh about it or something, you know, because the funny thing is usually people who really like it often like it for completely wrong reasons anyway. So, in other words, it's often, there's a sort of meaninglessness to it all, you know, in a certain way.
What would be the right reasons?
I'm not sure what the right reasons would be myself, nor would I, if I knew, I wouldn't be inclined to tell you, actually, but, because I'm not a critic, you know.
Yeah.
I get to play music, you know.
And that's a good thing. We're
glad. But we're very critical of many, many things. Get us wrong.
Right. Uh-huh. We talk a lot of trash in private, you know, but we just don't publish it.
But actually, you do, and we'll get to that, because we're going to talk about the webpage coming up.
Sounds like a potent threat. Okay.
We are with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, Steely Dan. It's the world premiere of Two Against Nature. Stick around. There's more music and more conversation coming up on the SFX radio network. My father passed away last year.
I will remember you.
And my greatest fear is that my 5-year-old daughter won't know her grandfather.
Will you remember me?
So I began producing family tree videos, taking the best of your old photos, home movies, memorabilia, and enhancing them with titles and effects, and your storytelling, giving you a legacy that'll ensure that future generations will know their family history, and my little girl will know her grandparents. Give your family the ultimate gift, a legacy family tree video. Call 305-653-1159 or visit legacyvideoproductions.com. 305-653-1159. Legacy Family Tree Video, transforming your memories into the gift of a lifetime.
So far, so good. So far, so good.
All right. Welcome back to the world premiere broadcast of Two Against Nature. I'm Nicole Sandler with Walter Becker and Donald Fagen of Steely Dan. The next song we're going to listen to is called Jack of Speed. Now, some of your songs are lyrically somewhat fairly straightforward, and others are more cryptic. I put this song in the more cryptic category because I'm not sure what it's about.
Well, I think that's a fair enough category to put it in. You know,
yeah, it's not really that cryptic, but you know, I'm often wrong about that.
Less literal, perhaps, and less, you know, it's sort of...
It's basically about...
essentially allegorical, kind of.
In our mind, it was about a guy who's in a lot of trouble. He's manic. For what reason he's manic, that's sort of, you know, up in the air, but... he's definitely, you know, he's meddling in matters he shouldn't be meddling in, and it's basically a warning from a friend of the family. For, of course, this friend of the family may have ulterior motives, you know.
I certainly hope so. I mean, otherwise, you know, what's the point?
I know.
So maybe slow down. And with Steely Dan music, the music just grabs you, and you can be singing mm-hmm. along and not even really know what you're singing to, and you just get into the groove, and then the lyrics draw you in later.
And I think that
yeah, we like to
happens.
sneak up on you a little mm-hmm. bit. It's true.
So probably happens with a lot of things in pop music, just for no other reason than you can't understand the lyrics often enough, or mm-hmm. you hear some little fragment of them that don't make sense. Doesn't make sense in and of itself.
And like what you said, Donald, about sometimes maybe they're liking it for the wrong reason. They could hear something entirely different than what yeah. you meant.
Well, you know, of course, there's also lots of different right reasons, too. Like for, I know a lot of people who love to exercise, you know, to Steely Dan, you know, and that's fine, you know. That's what a great use of music, you know, really.
Did you ever think of your music as workout music?
Not when we composed it, but, you know, maybe we should start thinking about it now.
There you go. An aerobics class to Steely Dan, it would work.
Well, that would impose a lot of constraints on us, though, because you mm-hmm. want to keep the tempo up a certain level, you know.
And you right. can't have those weird time changes in there.
But, you know, limitations are the nutrition for the artist, no?
Freedom with constraint, huh?
Freedom with constraint, yeah. You know, uh-huh. like the, you know, boundless yet finite universe.
That's right.
All right. Let's listen to Jack of Speed. It's Steely Dan from the brand new album, Two Against Nature.
imagine that we've just listened to that.
Yes, we've just listened to it. Jack of Speed from Steely Dan's Two Against Nature. It's the world premiere broadcast, and I must say, Walter, very nice guitar work.
Oh, thank you very much.
You play a lot more guitar on this album than on previous records. You're more out front.
Well, you know, we got tired of the having all these, you know, you go on stage and you've got to, here's the tune, and you've got to play this incredible guitar solo, you know? And nobody can play any of the guitar solos from our old records, so we figured if I did them all, then we'd all, you know, we'd be able to handle them.
So you couldn't play the stuff that maybe Skunk did, or?
Certainly not.
No.
That's why we always have two guitar players, though, you know? Because we always, our concept is you need a stone blues player.
Mm-hmm. That would be me.
That would be Walter. And then you need a guy with like unbelievable chops to be able to negotiate some of the changes that we write into the tunes.
Well, your playing on this record is great.
And thank you.
And it sticks out, and you know, I mean, it's got your sound.
So. Yeah, it does sound like me, for better or worse. You know, the Donald and I, in discussing the this record as we were making it, we reconceptualized Steely Dan as just a blues band, you know, sort of a fancy blues band, and so, you know, once we had decided that, that sort of gave me the inside line on the guitar solos.
When you put together the band, with the exception of drummers, because there were quite a few of them, it seems to be a pretty core band that plays on most of the record.
I think that's, for the most part, that's true. We ended up going for a more economical work method to produce these tracks than we have in the past, just because it seemed to be working out for us, and it gave the thing a sort of a stylistic unity. And also, I think because the way we were doing it, lent itself to that, the particular tracks that were on there and the kind of parts that people were going to play that would make it work. Once you found a couple guys that really had the right feel and the technique that they needed, there was, you know, less reason than there may have been in the past to go look for some virtuoso player or somebody who was going to do some really quirky thing. You know?
So you're talking economical in terms of manpower and people coming in, or in terms of the financial outlay, or both?
Well, certainly not the financial outlay. That's, you know,
we've never given up on that.
It's never really been a consideration with us. But
that's what I've heard.
Just in terms of the creative process, mm-hmm. you know.
So, was there ever any thought of bringing back some of the old Steely Dan players? Or
Well, we did. I mean, Dean Parks played on the record.
And, Hugh McCracken.
Hugh McCracken played some guitar stuff.
Few people from it, but you know what it was. A lot of this was just kind of sitting in a studio, usually in New York, and coming up with parts. And Walter was just, you know, he's been playing really great lately, so it just made sense for him to certainly try them. And in almost every case, they sounded great. So and I did a little more playing too, just rhythm playing, and with our other core players, Ted Baker, Tom Barney, and John Harrington, guitarist, that pretty much completed it. And then, you know, there was a few other players who made a great contribution, especially, should mention, Michael Linhart, who helped a lot with the horn section.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about something that's that a lot of people have talked about over the past few years.
I'm still thinking about the guys that we left out of the last list who are going to be calling my house after this show, like Leroy Clouden. I know he knows my number.
Right.
I get a call from him. Great drummer.
Feel free anytime you miss, think of one, just to throw it
who
in
else?
There.
Cause jeez, they're going to be.
Well, all the drummers.
Michael White, great
they can
drummer.
Read the
Vinnie
drummers.
Colaiuta.
Vinnie Colaiuta. Ricky Lawson.
Ricky Lawson, certainly.
Keith Carlock.
Why so many drummers?
We just, you know, in pop music, the drummer, what the drummer plays determines so much. It's so
they define
crucial.
The groove.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. crucial.
All drummers
to
have
the...
a different groove. And so a lot of our songs, because we write, although we feel that we do have a pretty fixed style in a certain way at this point, we do write a variety of different groove. So mm-hmm. so we're always looking for different drummers.
Well, I would imagine that your music is not easy to play because it's very complex and you do have those changes.
Some of it depends on what it is. There are some things that are very difficult and other things that, you know, you just need a really solid groove drummer and you're pretty in good shape.
As a matter of fact, the way it works out, many cases, the very simplest things are the hardest to do. Hmm. And, you know, the hardest to certain sort of shuffle beats, simple shuffle beats, you know, or just...
There's a lot of grooves. I think we use a certain sort of grooves that are somewhat antique in a certain way, so that younger people, there's not that many drummers who can play some of the grooves that we're interested in. Not that we're looking for something really that exact, but there's certain types of shuffle beats that were played differently, say, by drummers, say, in the 50s. And it's hard to find people who sort of can adapt themselves to that kind of thinking, you know.
In fact, I would say that there's been a sort of a global shift amongst musicians over the, you know, course of the last 20 or 30 years in terms of pop music, in terms of the way they feel time and where you know, a contemporary drummer would put a backbeat versus where a drummer, you know, in 1975 would have put a backbeat and so on.
And rhythm and blues drummer in the 50s was much more relaxed person, mm-hmm. I believe also.
Or at least he sounded that way.
He sounded more relaxed.
He sounded like a more relaxed person, which is all we really care about, you know. And, you know, I think part of what's changed that is people playing along with metronomes and machines and drum machines. And
well, that certainly had an effect in the last few years.
You know, time is much more in the last 10 or...
It's machine time.
15 years, you know, it's a kind of 20 years, yeah. It's more of a kind of a this sort of a very symmetrical kind of time, you know, as opposed to the quirky loping time feel that older players had, you know.
A lot of listeners, you know, I'm sure a lot of them still don't realize that I would say it's a huge percentage of sort of certainly of dance music is not a drummer playing at all, mm-hmm. but it's rather a drums recorded into a machine and then clock, you know, it's spit out at clock time.
You're kidding. Sorry.
I swear to God, that's what I've heard.
Let's move on because I do want to ask you about this subject, and I'm just going to come out with it and ask about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay.
There's been a lot written, a lot by you guys, and you know, let's see. You want to be in it? You don't want to be in it? It should be the two of you. It should be the whole Steely Dan universe. Tell us where you stand today on the Hall of Fame.
Well, you know, I mean, as you correctly mentioned, we've sort of been all over the lot over the last few years on this, and it's just a funny idea, you know, that they have a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that it's in Cleveland, you know, that some people are in and some people are out, uh-huh. you know, and they're inducted at this time or the other, and you know, the minute we heard about the thing, we knew that this was going to be, you know, keep us in yucks for a while, so we're probably not finished yet.
Yeah, you know, I think it's good that they have I think they've done a lot of good as far as, especially towards, you know, certainly, you know, bringing some integrity, especially to some of the older rhythm and blues mm-hmm. people and all that. But there's also something very silly about it, you know, and especially since it started to be televised a few years ago. You know, I used to go to some of the ceremonies and when they first started, and they were a lot of fun, and because, you know, the people in the you know, quote rock community, like are interesting people, you know, anything could happen there, and a lot of strange stuff happened at these award nights. But as soon as they started videotaping them for TV, it seemed to become just another one of these Grammy type ceremonies or one of these television events, and a lot of the fun went out of it. And I think a lot of the sort of a motivation for us, like having a little fun with the Hall of Fame, is really in a way provoked by their sort of making it into something that it didn't start out to be, really.
Now, if they came to you, you know, next year and said, "Okay, you're in," whether it has turned into a circus or mm-hmm. which it has. I mean, I remember hearing about mm-hmm. the ceremonies before it was televised, and
right.
it sounded like something special, and now it's a TV
right.
production.
Exactly.
Well, all of rock and roll is becoming basically sort yeah. of a TV show, which, you know, we're all afraid is going to be canceled at any moment, you know, and then we'll all be in reruns, you know. That's pretty much what it's where it looks. We're going to be canceled for a quiz show. Rock and roll's being supplanted by quiz shows.
If you know what Marshall McLuhan said, pull the plug, you know.
Is that what he said?
Towards the end of his life, he just said, you know, TV, the you know, the media, pull the plug.
Okay, so go back to having the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony not televised.
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, originally, the way it started out is Donald and I, between the two of us, we have a whole bunch of these old digital tape recorders that we bought back in the 80s that are are dinosaurs now. They're pretty useless, and they're cluttering up his studio here in New York and mine in Hawaii. In other words, it's a storage problem. And we hit upon the idea of donating all these machines to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in exchange for, you know, whatever sort of consideration we could obtain. And
a nice tax write-off.
Yeah, and you know, then at some point, someone added the idea of, well, let's throw in a case of honey mustard, you know, and it just went downhill from there, really. So
and all this is available on the website, which we'll talk about in a little while. But
yes, it
is. Here's an interesting item. I don't think it's on the website. Is that at one point, you know, my parents live in Cleveland, and my sister, my niece, Emily, practices piano on the same piano I learned on. It's very cheap Aquasonic Spinet, and you know, they were going to get a new piano, so they said, well, what do you want us to do with your old piano? And I said, well, I don't want to ship it back here. I tell you what, let me call the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and see if they want it. And they said they didn't have room for it, so I had to ship it back to New York.
Well,
imagine.
See, we didn't put that on the website because we thought the outrage, the sheer sense of outrage would sort of,
right.
You know.
We didn't want to do that to the Hall of Fame then.
See, but one would think that if there is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a piano that Donald Fagen learned to play it should be there.
Well, I don't know. It's you know, it's very narcissistic of me on one hand to think that they'd want the piano, but on the other hand, it was really a drag for me to have to pay to ship it back to New York.
if they forget about the piano, what about the 3M digital machines?
Exactly.
Absolutely. What about the honey mustard?
I know. I mean, we've made all these offers. I mean, we've really been the nice guys in this situation, and I think this goes back a long way, actually. And you know, if someone really wanted to beat the bushes, you'd find some you know, things that go way back. It's a complex history between us and the Hall of Fame.
Well, maybe someone in Cleveland is listening and they'll take notice.
Yeah.
I have sort of mixed feelings about that.
Me too,
okay.
You know.
We're with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. We're going to listen to another song from the brand new album, Two Against Nature. This one's called Janie Runaway.
Thank you.
Mention the Swedish ginger cookies?
No.
I just realized that's the last thing we offered them.
We can do that when they come out as a song, though.
Well, I just did it. That's it.
Oh, I they see. We're all back on the air?
Well, they can put it wherever they want. I mean, you know, they can edit that in somewhere. Well, or
say it or again have just it. In case. Let's start now.
Well, I can't do it again. Oh, I've okay. done it. All I mean, right.
Swedish
sorry.
Ginger cookies, did you know, do you bake them yourself?
No, they're commercially obtained.
Oh.
But very good.
Kathy's had them. She likes them.
Yeah?
Okay.
We're back with Walter Becker and Donald Fagen, Steely Dan. Two Against Nature is the brand new album. We just heard a song called Janie Runaway. Now, is that social commentary on street kids or lecherous old
it's
men?
Just celebration of life, really.
Ah. Yeah, we don't write social commentary.
We have nothing to add to the,
There's
know.
Plenty of that already. You know, we figure we're just, you know... Do something else, really.
More with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker coming up. Steely Dan, an unedited interview that was recorded at River Sound Studio in New York, the same place that they recorded the album Two Against Nature. It came out February 29th, 2000. The interview was recorded February 8th. It went on to win the Grammy for Album of the Year. Little did we know then, huh? As you could tell, I was having the time of my life. What an amazing experience to be able to chat like this with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. All right, that ends part one, but part two to come in just a few days. So, well, come on back and join us. I'd love to hear your feedback, so shoot me an email, radioornot@gmail.com. Let your friends know we're here, and thanks for listening. I'm Nicole Sandler. Have